Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Gigabit Nation, Broadband Talk Radio. I'm your host, Craig Settles, and I want to welcome everyone who's here in the audience today, and thank you for taking time to be with us. And of course, a big shout out goes to our sponsor, Hiawatha Broadband Communications, and you can find them at www.hbci.com. And they will be a future guest in the month of August talking about public-private partnerships. So you definitely want to hang in there for this series because there's a lot of great guests coming up in the next month. So our mission here at Gigabit Nation is pretty simple, but it's also a pretty powerful mission. And we want to provide useful information and insights to help communities, companies, and nonprofit organizations get more, better broadband to everywhere it needs to be in America. And that's pretty much it. But if you imagine the possibilities when we can do that, it's definitely pretty awesome. One minor housekeeping item. We're not going to be taking call-ins today. However, you can join in the live chat that's happening on the show's Blog Talk Radio page. You do have to register for an account to participate. But we welcome everybody to be a part of this great show that we got going on. So joining us today for our first show is Jim Ingram, who's the Vice President of Strategic Planning for EPB, which is Chattanooga, Tennessee's public utility and the operator of the city's 300-square-mile gigabit network. Now, Jim was a pivotal figure in getting this network project off the ground in his role leading the business planning team. So, Jim, welcome.
Thank you, Craig. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's a double pleasure to have the opportunity to be here on the maiden voyage of your radio show, and all of CPB wish you the best of luck with this. It's an exciting project.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So let's get right into it. So, Jim, we all hear from critics about communities running broadband network. And by all of the negative stuff that's been out there, your project technically should be a failure because every according to them, every government project in broadband in some way, is wrong and it's always a failure. It doesn't work. And you guys in particularly, you did a $300 million investment in this project. However, you had your first profitable month in April of this year, which was only 18 months after the launch. It's expected that revenues will sustain operations by 2012. You have 30,000 residential customers. You got 1,300 business customers. And you're also knocking millions of dollars off of EPB's operating costs, as a utility. How did you do it?
Well, all of that is true. And really, if you think about it, EPB is a municipal retail distributor of electricity at its core. Today, we're also a communications company, but we've been operating an electric system for over 70 years, and operating it as a very successful business. We went into the communications business, really when you start talking about fiber optic communications, it's been over 20 years that we've had fiber optic communication capability in the electric system to give us greater control over our substations and to improve the reliability of the power supply that we provide here in Chattanooga and into the surrounding counties. As you point out, if our business wasn't successful, we wouldn't be serving today over, 31,000 customers, both residential and commercial. The community is very pleased with the service that we're offering. We didn't build it without asking them first if they wanted us to build it. Originally, when we got into the communications business, it was back in 2000. It was really part of a downtown economic development project. It was the mayor at that time, as our current U.S. Senator, Bob Corker, asked EPB, could we offer downtown telephone service as a CLEC as a way of providing more competitive communications rates to help lure more business into the downtown area. Over time, that grew into a commercial telephone company, and eventually we added internet to it. Those businesses are all profitable today, and it's just been a little over 2 years now that we entered into the residential broadband market, offering triple play fiber optic service to our customers. The response to the community, I worked on the business plan. We have far exceeded all of the customer projections that I was originally very conservatively hoping that we would get in the early years of the project. We have a cash flow positive business today. We're really thinking more about the future of the business than whether we did the right thing in the past or not. The bottom line is, to get at your question, Craig, can you make these systems economically work? And the answer to the question is, sure, you can make them work. It just depends on where the return on investment goes. So in our case, it's going to the people of Chattanooga and to the surrounding counties. And so when we're not dealing with paying the kind of return on investment that, for example, your typical Wall Street investor would expect, what you find is that it's much easier to make the numbers work, especially when you have a community that is, hungry for this kind of new communication service. And Chattanooga is certainly hungry for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, very interesting. So, looking at the planning stage, what are the main ingredients to success at that stage? I mean, you have an idea. You haven't done this before. Not a lot of other folks have done this before. How do you do the planning so that when you come at the end of it, that you have a fairly effective plan to go forward with?
Well, the truth is that we started out in our planning process in a very incremental way. Like I said, we entered the communications business in 2000, so we've been in it and we're in our 11th year. We now have, over 10 years of experience, and we've incrementally added services and expanded our footprint over time. So from a planning perspective, we didn't decide to do it all in a big bang. We decided that we could not be successful at this business if we didn't earn the knowledge to successfully manage the business. The second thing we did was we started from what we knew and what we are good at, which is managing the electric system. And the communications infrastructure, the first questions we began to ask ourselves was, what exactly can this communications infrastructure do for the electric customer in Chattanooga? And then what can a cable television product, an internet product, a telephone product on top of that, do to extend that value? We started out with the notion that there were huge operating savings. That when I got involved in planning the system, EPB was a $400 million a year company. Today we're $650 million. When we started into this, we started asking ourselves some real questions. How could we effectively in the future design a more efficient electric system with a fiber optic network laid right over the top of it? We did some studies. We determined very quickly that there were $30 million a year in savings that we were, very conservatively confident that we could gain either directly for EPB or for the community by deploying the kind of metering, switching, control softwares that we're putting into place today to give us a more modern electric system. We worked with the electric, the EPRI, the Electric Power Research Institute, out in Southern California, and spent some time with them going over our business plans as a kind of a check. We asked them, do you think we're going to see the kinds of savings we're getting or we're projecting? And, sometimes they said, well, you think we're a little low there, we're a little high here. But we came down around to this idea that, it looks like about $30 million a year conservatively over 10 years. That's $300 million for you know, a network that originally was going to cost us about $220 million to build. So it looked like a pretty good deal for the community. We also looked hard at some, you know, some real basic questions. You know, what if the worst happened and nobody signed up for one communications service? Would the communications network be enough of a value for the electric system that it would still be a good financial deal for Chattanoogans? And, you know, the answer to that was a resounding yes. You know, just to give you an example, Craig, we have our electric load here in Chattanooga is still very much manufacturing based. About 40% of our load is in manufacturing. We believe, you know, the studies that we have done, we lose about, our customers lose about $100 million a year in productivity from very short duration power outages. You know, these can be seconds. And so with the switching technology and the automation we're putting in place today, we're going to have the ability to isolate those kinds of problems, reduce them significantly, and we believe that we'll be able to, you know, just conservatively out of the chute, eliminate 40% of that. So that alone is $40 million. So, you know, we're being more conservative than that. But the point is that, you know, there's just example after example that as we looked into the way our electric system operates, the way we size transformers for the electric system, you know, it's just, you know, it's lore in the electric business that you design, you know, for three times what you need to assure reliability. In the future, we're going to know enough about our electric system to where our engineers will be able to design the electric system to meet the load to, you know, tighter tolerances than that. That's going to reduce our capital costs. It's going to make us more efficient to operate. So, you know, the first thing we did was we figured out that there's a great deal of value just to the electric system alone, and that's without even going down the path of starting to think about things like demand response project programs that would, you know, adjust people's thermostats or water heater, heat pump controls or pool pump controls or new smart appliances or smart vehicles or any of that kind of value. Before we even get off into that kind of value, you know, we were very confident that we were going to be able to provide a much better electric system for Chattanooga. You know, when we talk to our customers, Craig, and we ask them, you know, how do you feel about how quickly we were able to get the power on after that last storm, and they'll say, well, you know, that's all well and good, but I'd just rather the power didn't go off in the first place.
Well, that makes
and
sense.
And so, you know, that's the standard. And mm-hmm. we are doing, you know, we're doing everything we can at EPB to try to drive to a place. Our chief operating officer coined a term that we've all kind of adopted. Our electric system in the future will be intelligent, it will be interactive, and it will be self-healing. And
right.
So with our communications system, we'll be able to interact with it. With the automation softwares we're installing, we'll be able to send commands and receive data at rates we've never dreamed of before. And it will be smart enough to fix itself, at least up to a point. Now, when it's laying down on the ground, back in April, we had some of the worst tornadoes come through town in our history. We had 129,000 of 170,000 customers off initially. We've been installing automated switching on our electric system, automated metering, and the control software through our SCADA system we have in place today allowed us to get almost a third of those customers back on almost automatically. And, you know, we had customers who were out for 7 or 8 days in Chattanooga. So
let me ask a question here. Let me interrupt for a second, though.
Sure.
It seems like at one point you mentioned it, and it was definitely mentioned when I was down there, that this is an economic development issue. And when you read about smart grid, you know, they talk about obviously the things that you talked about in terms of being able to manage the energy more effectively and making sure it gets to people and so forth. But it seems there's an economic aspect in that, you know, $40 million is not chump change if you're talking about improved productivity of the business community at large. So should communities then, you know, instead of looking at it strictly as, you know, should we have the utility be involved because it'll make energy management more effective, but saying we can impact our local economy more effectively if we have this network?
Well, you're exactly right about that. And the data itself is a little bit harder to come by on the economic development side as compared to what we understand about the electric system or the communication system. But I can tell you some things very deliberately about the economic development impact of both our smart grid and the fiber optic network. First of all, when I was working on the business plan, we hired a World Bank economist to work with the chairman of the finance department at our local university to do an analysis with a model called M-Plan, developed at the University of Minnesota. It's used by the World Bank basically to figure out what is the community return on investment for a capital project at the community level for infrastructure like a regional hospital or an airport or a sports stadium. So we asked them to go look at a fiber optic network and a smart grid and asked them to do some projections for us. They came back and they were being, again, very ultra conservative. And in the first run of the model, they said over 10 years, and in terms of increased payroll, tax base, productivity gains in the business community, that the project was going to be worth a little over $600 million to Chattanoogans. And they said that we would get somewhere around 2,600 new jobs out of it. We, since then, of course, I did that initial study back in 2006. We just finished rerunning that program 5 years later. The model is today saying that actually the value to Chattanooga over the next 10 years will look like something about $1.2 billion. But they're actually saying that, you know, the job growth is a little bit slower than they thought it might be, in part because the economy has really slowed down, obviously, since 2006. But they're now saying we're probably due for another 3,600 jobs. But one of the things that has been surprising to them is just last year alone, we added over 5,800 new jobs in Chattanooga. One of the things the fiber optic network has done for Chattanooga is it's energized everybody. The people in town are, you know, our economic development folks at the Chamber of Commerce, all of our regional development people, all of our political leaders, the business community here in Chattanooga, the public at large, everybody's just very excited about the promise of what this fiber optic network means. And when you see our internet product go through its paces up to a gigabit symmetrical speed, and when you see our IPTV offering, that it really is giving you a high-definition picture, you know, it's not hard to see where that energy comes from. And, you know, you and I can agree that energy is really important to a community's ability to attract capital investment and job growth. Mm-hmm. Just in the last, you know, 3 years, we've seen Volkswagen announce a major manufacturing plant here, and they're starting, you know, the cars are starting to roll off the assembly line next month. Just about almost all of the suppliers in the supplier park out at the plant are on our fiber optic service. Amazon has come to town. They're building a million-square-foot distribution center here. They said deliberately that our communications infrastructure and reliable power supply were part of the reason why they decided to locate here. Mm-hmm. We've had a healthcare company out of Miami called HomeServe move to Chattanooga, and they've said very deliberately that, you know, they have said Chattanooga residents have more bandwidth capacity in their home than we had in our business in Miami. We want to be in Chattanooga. Mm-hmm. So
let me ask a question.
You can't really say that the fiber optic network by itself is the attractor for economic development. But what you can say is that, you know, it's one of the top five issues, just like a reliable power supply is. What we can say is we have the most advanced infrastructure available anywhere in the world today. And we run it in a way to where the service that we provide is absolutely trusted. And that translates into a lot of community energy and excitement, which you know, projects to people who come to town to look for an opportunity to open a business here. Mm-hmm. It's not just the big manufacturing plants, though. Entrepreneurs are paying more attention to Chattanooga. We have new venture capital firms, seed capital funds that are opening up here. As a little company here in town, these guys are really exciting guys. They're you know, from New York, Wall Street, and out in Silicon Valley. It's called the Lamp Post Group. They're you know, they're providing seed funding for small technology based startups. Next summer, they're planning to bring kids from some of the best universities in the United States to Chattanooga, and they're going to put them up for the summer and say, here's a $50,000 prize. Who can come up with the best application for gigabit of bandwidth? Mm-hmm. You know, those kinds of things weren't happening in our town before we built our network.
Right.
And that's where the energy comes from.
Okay.
You know, you and I talked about the 48-hour launch when you were here in Chattanooga visiting with us. And, you know, we provided gigabit symmetrical bandwidth to a group of entrepreneurs, financial people, marketing people, management folks from our community. They all come together over a weekend with an entrepreneur, and by Monday morning they develop business plans and they launch a company. We had, I believe it was 7 or 8 companies launch in the last one. Around 30 jobs were created. So, you know, it comes from both ends.
Right.
It comes from both the larger corporate perspective and from the more entrepreneurial startup perspective, too.
Okay.
We've got over 1,300 business customers who, you know, are taking more and more advantage of that bandwidth capacity every day. Well, you mentioned, you know, everybody says nobody needs all the bandwidth, and how do you do that? You know, how have we made it work? I think the reality, Craig, is that if you give people access to the bandwidth capacity, they will make use of it, and that's what we're seeing here in Chattanooga.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this question. You mentioned, you know, bringing in someone to do research on the economic potential, and clearly as you delineate these different types of applications that are being, you know, brought into play because of the network, again, coming back to the planning stage, what kind of people do you need to bring around the table? You know, what does the community need to bring around the table to move them down a path where these kinds of applications are possible?
Well, I think if there are kind of two ways to come at that question. If you're thinking about building a smart grid, a fiber and a fiber optic network, you want to bring everybody in your community to the table. You want your political leaders, you want your business leaders, you want to interact with the public. We spent a lot of time at EPB first educating our employees on what we were doing, and then we sent them out into the community and met with every civic group we could find to say, here's what we're thinking about doing, here's what it'll take to do it, here's what you'll have once we have done it, here are what the opportunities will be for you. You know, we asked them very deliberately, you know, is this the kind of thing that it makes sense to you for us to do? Would you trust us to do it? You know, do you want us to do it? And if you don't, please say so. So from the perspective of build the networks, you need to really engage everybody. Now, when you start talking about applications, whether it's healthcare or education or it's e-commerce in the business community, whether it's public service in your government offices, or even if it's just a family at home in your residence where you're interested in entertainment and just communication service, it really depends on who the subject matter experts are. But you do want a core of people who are business people who think about this in terms of very practical business terms, who think about it in terms of, you know, is it a positive impact on my cash flow? Is this in some way reducing my risk of operating my business or my household? And is it adding to the value of my business or my house? You want that strong business perspective at the table. The second thing I think you want is, you know, this may sound a little strange to you, but you want the artistic community at the table. You want the people who can see beyond, you know, you want a little bit of the dreamer, the missionary, the futurist, the person who kind of looks around the corner and says, you know, hey, could we do that with this? And how could I make that, you know, how would that look to us? And, you know, you find that the more artistic folks in your community are typically the ones that will tend to have those kinds of visions. The third thing you need is you need the people who can manage the technology. You need the people with the knowledge of how to build websites, how to manage networks, how to operate all the software systems that go into operating these systems, who can answer technical questions in English for the average person to help them solve problems when they do come up. I think the third thing you want is you want software expertise, the fourth thing you want is software expertise. You want people who understand how to automate the way we do things and to push it out on these communications networks. The last thing you got to have, and this is really critical, is you have to have leaders who are committed to it. You have to have leaders that are a little bit of a combination of all of those other things. They've got to be willing to kind of take on the existing culture of the organizations they lead and move them in the direction of doing things in a little bit different way and a little more efficiently and a little more effectively. You need leaders who take a business approach to a problem and say if it's good for the community and it's good business, then we ought to do it, as opposed to we're going to do the bare minimum and hope nobody complains over the course of the year. So leadership is critical to it. We are very fortunate here in Chattanooga to have the support of both our county and city mayor, our city council, our county commission, the members of the Tennessee General Assembly here, our congressional leaders, and the business community, and our board of directors here at EPB that is made up of the business community. And then, of course, Harold DePriest, who's our president and CEO, is the leader of EPB. I know you met him when you were here, Craig, and he's been integral to this.
So now how do you move it off the dime? Because, again, you know, you can do the planning, and obviously you want to do enough planning to move things forward. But now we have a situation in the U.S. We've got Google has announced they're going to build a gigabit network for Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas. You have several hundred communities that have received stimulus grant money to do a whole number of middle mile and last mile projects. Isn't there a point here somewhere where you've got to move from the planning to the implementation, especially for those projects where, in the stimulus case, they have very specific deadlines to when they have to be finished? So how do you get from good planning to action?
Well, I think the first thing you have to have is the equivalent of a bankable deal. When we were working on our business plan for both the smart grid and the fiber to the home network, we were going to have to go to our city council and collaborate with the county commission, and our city council was going to have to give us permission to issue the revenue bonds to allow us to finance the network. So the first thing we had to have was a business plan that was logical and made sense, that was made up of numbers that were backed up by facts, that we had a good handle on what the risk was going to be, that we had answers for, like I mentioned earlier, you know, how we were going to manage that risk when inevitable problems come up, and that you're able to take that plan to the financial markets, and that you're able to raise the capital to fund actually building the system. So that's the first thing that you have to have. Once you've built that, you know, in our case in Chattanooga, it's a pretty business centric community around here. I can tell you that my boss Harold DePriest is certainly, you know, a businessman through and through, as is our board of directors. So to convince them that we had the numbers as right as we could get them was key to it. I think also that No, going past the financing, I think that what we did to communicate with the community was equally important to us. I know we've talked a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think getting out and talking to as many people in Chattanooga as we possibly could was a key to moving the project off the dime. The response back from the community was, I think, the thing that gave everybody the confidence that we were doing the right thing to move forward here.
So then based on that feedback, were you then able to put timelines in the plan, and then basically that dictated that, okay, we're going to start this phase of the project here, and we're going to start the next phase over here, and then we're going to do phase three at this point in time?
Exactly. That's exactly right. And once we knew that our political leadership, the business community, and the public at large were with us in this endeavor, we had a plan in place. And as soon as we raised the money, we went to work physically building the network and getting ready to launch the services.
Mm-hmm. So now what challenges do you think will face these various communities? Again, I focus on the stimulus grant winners because obviously a lot of people have eyes on them. You know, they've received all this money. People want
right.
to be effective. However, there are indeed, dozens if not hundreds of other projects being planned in other communities where they won't have this particular kind of benefit of stimulus money. What will the challenges look like once you hit that point where you've got to go? You know, you got to start building, you've got to start generating applications, or you've got to start at least encouraging applications, right? You got to bring these people on board to want to build the kind of applications such as Lamppost is doing and all the other different constituencies. But what challenges do they potentially face?
Well, I think, it's pretty typical for fiber to the home deployments, not just here in Chattanooga, although we certainly experienced that. But what happens is, the demand for your service overwhelms your ability to get it to people as fast as they want it. Just about every one of us in Chattanooga for over a year couldn't go to the grocery store without somebody saying, "When's the fiber coming to my neighborhood?" So we had to really communicate very carefully with everybody about how we were building the network out. We actually built it the same way we deal with a storm in the electric system. We built in the places where the population was densest and just moved out and actually finished the network in record time. But managing people's expectations on the front end and the demand is critical. Earning the knowledge for yourself on how to run these networks once you've built them and you have to operate them, putting in the homework, putting in the time to build that expertise, to make sure that you have the technical people on your staff who know how to operate these networks, who know how to maintain these networks, who know how to upgrade these networks is critical. It's also important to have good vendor partners. Our network was built primarily in partnership with Alcatel-Lucent, we have to manage that relationship, and they have to manage it too. When we started into the fiber optic network, the actual construction of it, our mantra was, number one, the network has got to work. We put this thing up, it's got to function as advertised. Number two, our business systems have got to work as well as our 70-plus-year-old electric business systems, because that's the standard people would hold us to. So we had to make sure that we could connect people to the system, that we could give them an accurate bill, that we were able to educate them about our services that were available, making sure all our operating systems were working the way they were supposed to was another critical issue, and people, again, are vitally important to that. The last thing was we had to enter the market and compete for customers, and so we had to learn how to go out and sell community-wide. And offer a service where people have other choices from other providers.
Well,
so
this brings up an
it is no small
question.
Matter to make sure that you're prepared to meet demand, that you're prepared to operate your network effectively and that you're prepared to take care of the customer.
Right, and that makes a lot of sense. One of the things that comes to mind, though, is that at this point we were talking about the technical issues that have to be dealt with, the ability to manage the network, manage customer expectations. I think this is where some folks would chime in and say, well, why is the public sector getting into this as opposed to, you know, why didn't you let the private sector alone address these issues and not have to worry about climbing that particular learning curve?
Well, like I say, we started into this process looking at it from the electric system perspective. So we were basically asked by the public to get into the communications business in the first place back in 2000. We got into the business, and that business has slowly grown. When it came time for us to build our fiber optic network, both our county and our city mayor sat down with the incumbent providers and said, if you'll build this network, then, you know, there's no reason for EPB to do it. And the response was, no, we don't think that Chattanooga needs this network. So we were convinced that if we didn't do it ourselves, a city like Chattanooga was unlikely to see this kind of infrastructure, you know, for a minimum of 10 years. If you look at fiber to the home deployments that have been done by the incumbent carriers, they typically build into neighborhoods that have per capita incomes of around $85,000 a year. The per capita income in Chattanooga is less than $40,000 a year. So we believed and still believe, and it's still the case, that we wouldn't have seen this infrastructure if we hadn't moved into the market. Now, since we have moved into the market, some of the incumbents have deployed some of their latest technologies here to compete with us. So even if some customers have not signed up for our service, they're getting better service. Mm-hmm. The rates are not going up annually the way they were every year before we built our network, because competition has been injected into the market. And these are all good, we believe, are, you know, good outcomes from the deployment of the system.
So let me, I'm going to shift course just a little bit here. With a number of communities, they are finding that there is reluctance on the part of their utility, whether it's a public utility, and sometimes particularly if it's a private utility, where the utility company views the broadband part of the deal, not so much the smart grid, but the broadband, providing services to businesses and consumers, as almost a third rail. There's been a reluctance to jump into that. Now, the stimulus money made it easier in some cases because there was specific grants set up for utilities and for smart grid development. But how would you counsel utilities in other communities to maybe not look at this thing so with so much dread?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to try to offer, you know, advice to another community on what's in their best interest. I would say that I think all of us at EPB would say that any community in the United States that wants to tackle this problem can tackle it and be successful from a business standpoint if they have some of the qualities that I mentioned earlier. First of all, you have to have leadership that has the vision to go down this path and is willing to deal with the organizational cultural barriers and the resistance to change that goes along that with that. So you have to be willing to tackle that problem, and you need leaders who have the patience and the maturity and the determination to make that happen. The second thing you have to do is you really need to develop some of the people with the right skill sets. You know, Chattanooga is not the only municipal fiber-to-the-home deployment in Tennessee. There is one in Jackson, Tennessee, run by the local electric system there. There's one in Bristol, Tennessee. There's one in Morristown, Tennessee, in Tullahoma, Tennessee, in Clarksville, Tennessee. You know, these are systems much smaller than EPBs, but they have, you know, the local electric systems have power distributor managers, and they have mayors typically that saw this as an economic development opportunity, who saw it as an opportunity to both modernize the electric system. Electric systems haven't been modernized very much in the last 50 years. You know, if you look at research and development investments in pharmaceuticals and automotive and computers and software, you know, the electric industry has barely put in a nickel for every dollar that's been invested by these other players, these other industries. So you got to have, you know, Craig, you have to have the leadership, and you have to have the business people, the technical people, and you have to have the commitment to go out and have a conversation with your community and to be able to explain to them what it is you want to do and to see if they'll support you in doing it.
Right, and that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you always got to have that buy-in from the community. Now, one of the questions that was posed to me by actually a couple of people is, do we really need a gigabit, right? They will break out, well, you know, there's smart grid, but you're moving, you know, information, and, you know, every home, how much information does it, you know, is moving from a home to back to the utility? Or there's an application to do X or an application to do Y, and can you do that application with a much smaller, less robust network? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, we offered the gigabit capacity in Chattanooga without really having any notion of what anyone would actually do with a gigabit, you know, to the home. To be, you know, perfectly candid with you, we were into a little bit of a back and forth with, you know, how fast are we, how fast are they, and we decided to end the debate by saying, look, our network has the electronics deployed in it. It worked to the gig. Here's a gig. You know, we put a price on it, but we don't really know if that's the right price as time goes by. But, you know, we look at the gig like we look at smartphones, the iPhone today. I mean, it's a game changer. I mean, it added to that positive energy here that we have in Chattanooga. We were recently named one of the 7 most intelligent communities in the world, in part because of the fiber optic smart grid gigabit capacity that we've deployed here. So, you know, it was a way for us to call attention to what we're doing. It was a way for us to try to attract more of that energy both in Chattanooga and beyond Chattanooga into town around this idea of the gigabit. But to say that, you know, we have about a dozen residential customers that are on the gig, and for them it's, you know, I think if you asked them, they would say, you know, well, I've got the fastest internet in the world at my house, and that's why they have it.
But isn't the reality,
though? Do they have
though,
a, you know, a Cray supercomputer running in their basement? You know, no.
Right. But isn't the reality, though, that the fundamental cost for building out the network isn't going to really change that much if it's a 100 megabit network versus a gigabit network? I mean, aren't you really, what you're doing is changing some component parts of the network as opposed to having to, you know, pour a humongous amount of extra dollars into the project to go from 50 megs capability to a gigabit capability?
That's exactly right. We describe the fiber optic network as being future-proof. The fiber itself is capable of transmitting terabits of data. It really is only limited by the electronics that we deploy on the network. And right now, the network is really robust enough to serve the 8 million people of New York City. And so that's why we're able to offer the gigabit capacity.
So let me, okay, so I'm gonna transition yet again. Another thing that caught my eye when I was down there.
Okay.
You have the fiber network, but then the city has built a wireless network on top of that, and it's a wireless network for government use, meaning all the various mobile workers for the government use it. And but the network has 16 megabits symmetrical up and down. Now, in 2004, 2005, you know, there was tremendous interest in having citywide wireless network. and some of the reasons for that were government use. But, you know, for a number of reasons, it didn't make it out of the gate. Do you see what Chattanooga is doing is realizing that dream of municipal wireless from 5 or 6 years ago? With the gigabit network, you're able to make that dream a reality.
Well, I think our fiber optic network gives our county and city government, as they move toward deploying anybody in town, really, who's managing any kind of a wireless network, it gives us an ability to offer them the fiber as a backhaul service to reduce the distances that they have to move the data stream. And we're actually offering that service today to the city and actually to some private companies. When we get into talking about wireless networks obviously don't have the bandwidth capacities that the fiber optic network has, so the longevity of it, we believed, was more efficient. While we're using a 900 megahertz mesh network in our metering solution, we're only putting, you know, direct fiber connections to the meters in 50% of the homes and businesses in our service area. When we looked at the economics of it originally, you know, Craig, when you were here, you saw, you know, Chattanooga sits right at the base of the Cumberland Plateau.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are right in the middle of rolling hills and mountains, and our topography made building a, you know, citywide wireless network a pretty expensive endeavor as compared to what it costs us to build the fiber optic network. Now, the city has been able to build the project that they've started with, you know, based on a grant, and they've been able to do some fantastic things with it. I think I'd kind of refer you to the folks over at the city of Chattanooga to get into the details of that, because they're just so much more capable of describing all that to you as opposed to my ability to do it. But, you know, we support those networks. We are not really in the business today of, you know, other than our metering solution, trying to manage some sort of public internet access-based municipal network.
Right, but a visionary could come in and look at, you know, what Chattanooga is doing, and they could dream of, well, you know, if we had a fiber network, and if conditions were right to put the wireless components in there, then the wireless becomes yet one more reason for moving the network project forward.
Sure, absolutely, and you know, the energy in today's market toward mobile solutions, you know, make that very easy to see.
Mm-hmm. So now I'm going to, as we've got about 10 minutes left here, I want to talk about something that I read in the paper today, which is indirectly tied to you guys, but I think it's a very interesting project. So there's this program called GigU, and in this program it's a coalition of 29 colleges and universities in the U.S. that are partnering with telecom companies to create, in essence, university networks that blossom out and provide services to the surrounding communities. And, I mean, which I think in and of its own right is a interesting project, but it's part of something called U.S. Ignite. And you guys were in Cleveland a few weeks ago. It's a program running from the White House Department of Science and Technology. But that caught my attention. I'm wondering, you know, if you can talk a little bit about what is U.S. Ignite, and more importantly, you know, what does it mean to others that are trying to pursue broadband?
Sure. Basically, what U.S. Ignite is designed to do is really to try to repeat the original ARPANET internet experiment. So the original internet that was developed by ARPA, you know, was text-based, and for those who go back far enough, the first time I actually experienced the internet, I think it was in 1990, and it was two little software programs called Fetch and Gopher, and it was all text-based, and later on at the High Performance Computing Lab at Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, I believe is where it is. You know, Netscape was born there in the browser market, and of course, America Online, Yahoo, Microsoft, all of the browser companies sprouted, and the internet, the e-commerce world sprouted from that. So I think, you know, what U.S. Ignite is really is the Office of Science and Technology Policy and the National Science Foundation. What they're doing is they're trying to take and connect the islands of bandwidth capacity in the United States together over a least access transport capacity that today is a part of what's called Internet 2 and a new network called Genie. And basically what this is 100 gigabit transport capacity that connects 85 Tier 1 research universities and will soon connect 6 municipal fiber-to-the-home deployments. So Chattanooga will be one of the 6. Lafayette, Louisiana, in the city of Washington, in the District of Columbia in Washington, D.C., in Philadelphia, and up in Ohio at Case Western University, the Case Connection Zone, and then out in Utah in the Utopia communities. But the idea is that we move from the megabit-based internet we have today, megabit per second, to the gigabit-based internet of the future. So to do that, what they want to do is push the bandwidth capacity, and what GigU is doing is pushing that capacity out into neighborhoods around those universities. Now, what Genie is doing is it pushes that capacity not only to the universities, but for example, here in Chattanooga, they'll push that bandwidth capacity, that transport across our network and then out to the larger internet, out to all, you know, 31,000 of our customers. So what we're doing is we're making the bandwidth, or what Ignite is doing is making the bandwidth available, and then they're bringing the National Science Foundation research community to the table. They are providing some grants to try to catalyze the development of applications that work at these kinds of speeds. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm not the technology person, but the most websites, I believe, today are designed to work on a T1 line, about a meg and a half. And the idea here is to think about how do we build those websites of the future that work at, you know, 30 megabits per second, driving up over time up to a gig. So these are much more interactive, robust, high-definition, rich media kind of environments. And when the public sees these applications, it addresses the question you started with today, which was, you know, why does anybody need all this bandwidth? And really what they're trying to do is catalyze the public-faced solutions in healthcare, in education, in entertainment, in public service, in transportation, in manufacturing, whatever it might be, to really create a new fast lane on the internet as we know it today.
Right. So it does sound like something that communities need to pay attention to as it unfolds. And in fact, I called the White House Office on Science and Technology to talk to them for a couple of minutes, and I think they have some plans for a very public launch of this initiative in either late October or September. And so I would encourage, you know, listeners to, you know, to pay attention, relay the information, you know, try to figure out what opportunities are there that communities can tie into, right? I mean, that seems to be a good way to go.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that the White House and the National Science Foundation both are very interested in engaging communities around the country and what they're trying to make happen here. I think that the long-term goal of Genie over the next 5 years is to have 200 towns on this network and to grow the university population at the same time. You know, it's our kids who have grown up in the internet age, in the age of Xbox and PlayStation and Wii. You know, it's probably the young people that are going to play a huge role in defining what these new applications look like. And, you know, this is part of the reason why they want to push that bandwidth down to the, you know, down to the dorm room, if you will, so that, you know, it's kind of like the Facebook incubation in the dorms at Harvard. You know, they they believe that that same kind of innovation is possible everywhere, because so many young people are so much more technically literate than, you know, I'm 53, than I sure was at, you know, 17 or 18 or 19.
So to wrap up, we've got just a couple minutes left here. Give us two main tips. How do we get a good plan to move broadband forward at, you know, at the community planning level? What do you do? Two things.
Become a student of building and managing fiber optic networks, and take the time to earn the knowledge to learn how to do it from both a technical and a business perspective before you jump in with both feet. And find the right people to help you to learn your way up that curve. Don't be afraid, if you're serious about this, to spend a little money to learn those lessons. You're going to save yourself a whole lot of trouble down the road if you get yourself in a position to where you understand these systems well enough to where you can manage the problems yourself. And there are problems in every endeavor in life. And so you need to be prepared to manage them. You don't want to find yourself in a position where you're relying exclusively on any vendor or consultant to manage your business for you. They're important partners, but you've got to lead it. So that's my first piece of advice. My second piece of advice to a community that's looking at this problem would be to engage as much as you possibly can with the public, to share with them what is possible and practical to do, and to talk to them about the value that can be created from this, but to give them the fairest opportunity that within your means to let them give you honest feedback about whether they want your organization to do something like this or not. You know, it's typical that, you know, any municipal system like us who starts down this road, you're going to find yourself in some lawsuits from the incumbent carriers before you get through with this process. And you want to make sure that the community is with you and not against you before you get into those exercises.
Great. I think that's, you know, both very excellent points, and I'm sure we will be emphasizing and reinforcing those messages as the show goes along. Jim,
right.
I want to thank you very much for contributing your time to the maiden voyage of this project, which is its own self an adventure. I have to say, this radio talk show thing is pretty cool. But thank you. You've added a lot to the discussion.
Very welcome. This has been a lot of fun, and I hope we can come back someday and do it again.
And I hope to be able to come back to Chattanooga some point and see more of the city, because I definitely didn't see enough, even though I was there for 3 days. So I'm looking forward to it.
We'll roll out the red carpet, Craig. Come anytime.
Hot diggity.
We'd love to have you.
All righty. So, folks, next week we'll have Franklin County, Virginia in to talk about their public-private partnership network, which is mainly wireless. And then on Wednesday of next week, we'll have Santa Monica in, and Santa Monica also has a gigabit network. And we're going to talk a lot about economic development. We're going to talk a lot about wireless and the role of wireless in the broadband picture. I believe that I know I talk a lot about fiber and I champion it, but there's also, you know, there's a role for wireless, and it's not a minor or inconsequential role. I'd like to also thank Hiawatha Broadband Communications for being our sponsor, and also our media partners, GigaOM, MuniWireless.com, and Broadband Communities Magazine, all publications actually that I contribute to in one way, form, or fashion, and they're all helping to get the word out about broadband. So thank you very much, everyone in our audience. Thank you again, Jim, and we will definitely see you next week. If you want to continue having a chat discussion online, that will continue after we sign off on the air here. So have a great day, a wonderful week, and let's get broadband done. Thank you.